Welcome to the Henry Cuenca Radio Show on KKRN Community Radio in Bella Vista, California, and transmitting from Round Mountain. Here we explore the lives of triumphant humans who endure life's persistent challenges. Our guests are driven by passion and inspiration and live with a compelling sense of purpose. Their persistence, perseverance are brought on by tragic episodes or by wonderfully cradled lives. But for whatever reasons, guests will openly share their innermost feelings and beliefs that fuel their works. With determination, courage, and insistence, our guests are driven to put more into life than they take out. Please listen to these inspirational, triumphant stories. And yes, I am Henry Cuenca. Today's guest, a Southern California woman of Jewish Russian heritage, grew up in the same house for 20 years. But this was not to be the pattern of her life to be. Her travels have taken her on journeys throughout the world: Ireland, Italy, England, Germany, Morocco, Hungary, France, Spain, and now to Sri Lanka and China, as she looks for inspiration through color and form. She's an artist of many talents. Watercolor, painting, photography are simply ways she resonates with the world. You see, due to a devastating, debilitating loss of her young 7-year-old son, she sought refuge behind paint and brush. Not only was she able to find herself from this tragic loss through art, but she is also able to help others learn how to find confidence and passion to conquer fear through simple drawings and paintings. Please listen to this heartfelt story. Barbara Enochian, thank you to our show.
Well, thank you for having me here. I feel very flattered and honored that you are interested in speaking to me.
Well, I think a lot of people are going to be very interested in listening to your story. Probably, Barbara, a lot of people probably don't know about the life of an artist. So I wonder if you could start us off by telling us, you know, essentially, how does your day or how does your life progress?
Well, with this being summertime or late spring, I wake up early, 5:45 to 6, and I'll meander into the kitchen. And generally, even though I have a 1,000-square-foot studio, my kitchen table in the house is still covered with art materials. I tend to do the less messy projects at home in the house so that I can go back and forth between being in the kitchen and painting back and forth or doing whatever household things need to be done and still be surrounded by my art. So in the morning, I'll go into the kitchen and I'll immediately think, ooh, I wonder what it looks like this morning.
Oh, so this is something that you're looking at, that you're conceptualizing or you're working through.
So it's a painting that I have been working on like the night before. Like right now, I'm working on a series of watercolor paintings of succulents and cactus for a show that's coming up in Weaverville in the month of July. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I work late into the night when the lighting is getting dark.
Right. Is that time to quit?
Oh, yeah, it should be time to quit. And I'll suddenly look at my watch and say, oh, you've got to stop doing this. So when I get up in the morning, the first thing I want to do is see, well, how does it look this morning with natural daylight? So I'll set it up and look at it and look for the things that need to be corrected, the things that are bothering me, and then I'll say, okay, no, I'm not going to touch it now. Because once I start painting, it's really hard to stop. So then I'll have my breakfast, and then a lot of times I'll check my email or my phone, and there are a lot of images that come up through different websites and things that I look at, and so I'll start looking at art. So my day starts with art.
So this is essentially 24/7 type of a thing?
I feel like it is.
Really?
Especially in the past 5 years. I really feel like every single day, 7 days a week, I'm if I'm not doing art, I'm thinking about art. And if I'm not actively painting, I'm just looking at photos for inspiration, or I'm going to the store looking for frames, matting, art materials. Mm-hmm. My whole day feels like it's really preoccupied by
And about art. How many hours a day do you actually put into physical part of art? Not the mental part of thinking of things, but the actual doing painting or what constructing art?
Mm-hmm. Probably 3 or 4. If I'm really wrapped up in something, I can't stop. It might be longer. If I have a busy day, it might be shorter. But there's so much more to creating a piece of artwork than the doing, because there's also the looking. You have to put that painting up there and sit and look at it for a while and think, okay, where am I going with this?
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that occupies my mind the most is before I begin something, I have to sit and think for a while, like, what is it I want to do with this? What am I trying to say? How do I want to say it? What colors do I want to use? What do those colors mean? And so there's a lot of time spent in my mind before I begin mm-hmm. something.
Barbara, I know that there's more than just one form of art that you concentrate on. Tell us the variety of different art that you bring to us.
One of my things that has kind of made me, for a while, I felt almost self-conscious about the fact that I'm eclectic. It's like I have so many interests and so many different materials that I can't really stay focused in one direction for a very long time without switching to another medium. So watercolor is something that I love because it can be faster, and I can capture an image sometimes quickly in a loose, beautiful sort of way.
Mm-hmm.
And watercolor bleeds. The colors mix together. And the thing that I keep trying to tell my students and I keep trying to tell myself is don't try to control it. Let it go.
Let it do
what watercolor does best. And that's just let the water, let the paint move. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times when I have students and I'm demonstrating how to put water on the paper and put two colors in there and let them combine, it's just like they're three-year-old children. They're like, oh, I didn't know you could do that, you know.
And these are adults
that
are students of yours. So how many forms of art do you actually work in?
So I do watercolor. One of the things I love probably the most is what I call mixed media.
Mm-hmm.
So that's acrylic paint. It's pieces of paper, often pieces of paper that I've hand-colored myself with acrylic paint. And for a long time, I used to color paper bags, like shopping bags. I used to paint red, blue, gold, yellow, orange on pieces of paper bags and then rip them and use those as my art materials. And the other thing I do is straight acrylic painting. And lately, my passion has become painting with credit cards.
No, I've never heard of that before. Tell us about that.
It's really simple if you visualize it. You take your old credit cards, and we all have lots of old credit cards.
For sure.
And we have hotel keys we forgot to turn.
Oh, I'm sorry. We've got them for our grandkids, stacks of them.
Yes, and we have AARP cards that they send us no matter what.
Right.
And so then I just cut those like either in half or in thirds. So I have wide edges and narrow edges, and mm-hmm. then I put the acrylic paint out, and I use the edge of the credit card, and I scoop up the acrylic paint, and then I smear it on the canvas or the illustration board I'm using as my support, and I get just these really great smears of color.
Is this a form of art that you've founded yourself, or did you see it before, or what?
Well, you know, people keep asking me that because I recommend to my students, you know, if you don't want it to look too tight, use a credit card. And they all have their own credit cards now. But I can't remember where I first learned that. I mean, I must have read it in some article or something. But it absolutely works for me. It works better than a palette knife. And in a collage I just finished, it's being framed right now, it's a picture of some dilapidated buildings, like an old city from Morocco. And I put in all kinds of Moroccan newspaper and hand-stamped papers I've made. And then in the end, I had a Visa card with Yosemite on it. So I cut the Visa card. Well, it was already in two pieces. And I glued the Visa card into the skyline because the sky from the Yosemite image forms the sky in the collage, and the little bits of the mountains are buried into my city scene.
And Barbara, how long have you been professionally doing art?
Well, my degree was in history of art from UC Berkeley, and I was there during the time of abstract expressionism, Bay Area figurative artists, which some of you may or may not know of, but it's kind of abstracted figures. And that then I took a little break while I had my family, and now I've been active in art for 25 years. And, I mean, am I a professional artist? I suppose I am now, yeah.
Well, I mean, you sell your art is purchased. I mean, you do have a following of people that mm-hmm. buy your art
mm-hmm. uh-huh.
for tender, for money, right?
Yes, yes. I've been selling art for, I guess about 25 years. Mm-hmm.
So,
in fact, when I first went back to the college, within a few months, maybe 5 months after my son died, I started there, and I was just like, finally, the answer to my just supreme grief. Oh, I could cry right now thinking about it. It was so all-encompassing, that loss. So I just buried myself in the art classes at Shasta College. And within 2 years, I was starting to have shows. I was really producing a lot of art. Mm-hmm. I was taking a lot of classes.
And how many pieces of art do you produce now, just generally?
Well, I probably do several a week.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah, several a week, for sure. Mm-hmm. And I always have about four things going at a time. I'll have like a watercolor, an acrylic painting, a collage, the beginning of something else. I don't even know what it's going to be, but I like to have a lot of things going so I can have something in the house, several things in the studio. I have several rooms in the studio, something in one room, something in the other room.
Very interesting. You seemed a little bit hard on yourself earlier. You made some statements that you're really hard on yourself, and I once read that if an artist has talents, they need no other critic but themselves to create. Does that resonate with you?
Oh, I think we are absolutely our very, very worst critics. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And there are very few paintings of my own that I can actually live with. I mean, once I've finished, the word finish is used loosely, but once I've finished, framed a painting, I feel like I've poured so much into it that in a way I want to be done with it.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, the painting represents all the struggles that went into it. And I sometimes need to have space between myself and the painting.
And you are constantly in various shows or places mm-hmm. where your art is selling. So where all do you position your art?
Well, I'm really fortunate in that I am a member of Riverview Golf and Country Club. Mm-hmm. And many, many, many years ago when the clubhouse was built, I was teaching lots of art classes, and a lot of members were of the country club were also in my classes. And so I was able to kind of commandeer the entire stairwell mm-hmm. and upstairs. Mm-hmm. And I have lots of paintings there of mine and my students. And North Valley Art League, I have a show coming up at the Weaverville Main Street Gallery. And
so you have ongoing shows, I guess, just all the mm-hmm. time.
City Hall, yeah, lots of places.
I know that you're highly recognized in the area as far as art goes. Your name does appear mm-hmm. quite a few places.
Mm-hmm.
You're very, very visible. We're going to have to take our first break here, Barbara. So we're going to talk a little bit more about art when we come back from our break. And for our listeners, this is, if you're just tuning in, this is the Henry Cuenca Radio Show on KKRN 88.5 FM, listener-supported radio. And I am Henry Cuenca, and my guest today is Barbara Enochian, a local artist. So we're going to be right back real quick. Don't go too far, and we're going to be right back with Barbara. Thank you. This is Henry Cuenca again on the Henry Cuenca Radio Show, and my guest today, Barbara Enochian, a passionate artist. Barbara, we're talking about, you know, your works of arts and different forms of arts and where you make your presentations and the work that you put into art. You went to college. You have a degree in art, Berkeley, and what specifically was that degree in?
In the history of art.
History of art.
Mm-hmm.
Or has there been any one particular artist who has influenced your life more than another?
Absolutely. Going to Berkeley in the 60s, 70s, one of the artists that most impressed me was Richard Diebenkorn,
mm-hmm.
Who is a really well-known West Coast artist and no longer is living, but he did these loose sort of landscapes that you could barely recognize as a landscape, but it was his brushwork. He used mm-hmm. large brushes and kind of slopped the paint on and painted loosely, and that was really how I used to want to paint, and I still would like to paint. The other person who influenced me was Robert Rauschenberg, who was a collage. He used collage in his artwork, and not many artists were using collage in a professional sort of way mid-century.
Mm-hmm.
So Robert Rauschenberg, Jasper Johns, but then Wayne Thiebaud had a huge influence.
Well, you have a whole
me.
Litany of folks.
I do, uh-huh. And for the people in my classes, they know that one of my passions, aside from art, is art books.
Mm-hmm.
I have a huge collection of art books because I cannot teach art and I can't even do art without my references to the past.
Well, certainly. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I can understand that clearly. Would you categorize your art as traditional or modern art or somewhere in between?
I think maybe the best way to categorize it is experimental art,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not to the extreme. But I like experimenting. My main goal is to look at something or have an idea in my head, and then I try to figure out how can I express this without it being too realistic. How can I make this something that would make a viewer stop and take another look? Because mm-hmm. I think viewers generally only spend 3 or 4 seconds looking at a painting.
Really?
If you go through an art exhibit,
mm-hmm.
whether it's a gallery or a museum, generally you just breeze right by. So if you want to do something that catches a viewer's attention and captivates your own interest, for me, I'm always looking for an alternative, a unique way of expressing that.
Of ongoings. What challenges or problems do artists have?
Well, a lot of people have trouble with deciding what they're going to do, coming up with the idea, just like a writer would have writer's block.
Sure.
Artists get artist block.
So how do you actually start an idea? How do you get an idea?
That is a really, really good question. And luckily, just lately, especially in the past, I don't know, 5-10 years, I just have more ideas than I can possibly get
really?
To. More
really?
More ideas. Just ideas come at me from all over.
Uh-huh.
But one thing that has actually helped as well is, things like Pinterest. For me, I can use that as a way to look at art from all different sorts of artists. And maybe something that they do triggers something that I might want to do. And then photographs. Photographs mm-hmm. are always triggering me, and then I'll look at them and think, well, how else can I make that look? And I'll take 3 or 4 or 5 photographs, and I'll look at them and try to put them together in a new way.
I know that that travel is a big part of your artwork, where you see different cultures and different ways of expressions in art. And I know that's a motivator for you to mm-hmm. do travel. Can you tell us about how these travels have actually spurred ideas or different concepts or different methods in your works?
Well, I think travel has become almost my largest motivator for seeing images. The recent trip to Morocco just was huge for me. It was just such a colorful country in so many ways, just all kinds of marketplaces called, you know, souks with brilliant colored fabrics and shoes and silver and, you know, bracelets and just things that just came at me, one thing after another. And then there was the desert with all of its hills and its sandy colors. And all the houses there were like, I mean, you drive by them and think, oh, my gosh, no one could possibly live there.
But, and they live there.
But they live there. So all those images have just, they just keep coming back to me. And I've done painting after painting of pictures not only of, you know, of like this trip to Morocco, but of pictures of Spain and Italy, and most of the time it seems to be the architecture that appeals to me.
Do you take a notebook when you go and travel, or you just take pictures?
Well, I have taken notebooks. I've taken watercolors, but generally my time is just too busy when I'm traveling, so that I use the camera instead.
Does your husband go with the flow, or does he interfere in some of your intense moments of looking at things?
He's great. He just stands by my side whenever All I want
right.
to do. I do, or he'll sit down on a chair and you know, look at his phone while I take pictures, and he just kind of gives me the freedom to do whatever it is I want to do.
I guess being an artist, as you have explained to us, really comes from just an outward expression, right? I mean, it's just an expression that has to manifest itself that way. Mm-hmm. And I think that probably is, I would imagine, one of the best ways that an artist can excel is just having that passion
mm-hmm.
Inspire them to the things that you talk about. I mean, form and color and those sort of things.
I feel like one of the things that I'm really appreciating after all these years of making art and studying art is that I'm kind of at the point where I have certain tools, like my tool bag of skills,
mm-hmm.
so that I don't feel intimidated like I did in the beginning, so that I can think about something and then jump in with both feet.
Mm-hmm.
And the main thing I try to impart to the people in my classes is just go for it. It's almost mm-hmm. like the Nike logo.
Go
like,
for
just
it.
Do
yeah.
it. You
just
know?
Do it. Right.
Just do it. Just do it. Because some people will sit and be so fearful of making a mark on their paper that isn't going to be what they expected it to be. And I always say, you know, you can fix it. You can change it. It doesn't have to be one way. Just go for it. Just do it.
I like that attitude.
And I'll say, stand up. Don't sit down. Stand up and let your arm move from the shoulder. Forget this little wrist action.
Right.
Painting is about large movements, not necessarily small movements. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, they can use a big brush. Don't use that little, you know, number six brush. Make it large. Make it bold. Move around. And just see what happens. And they'll go, oh, no, I can't.
So there's some restriction there, right?
I said, so then I'll say, okay, I'm going to stand here and take this brush, and like a two-inch, you know, wall painting brush. Take this brush and just smear the paint on there. And they'll go, no, I just do it. And they do it. And they go, oh, my gosh, look. And I'll say, okay, now take this brush and put that on there. And they do it. And I go, look what you've done already. And it's just like watching a little child.
It's like spoon feeding, I guess, isn't it?
Oh, it is. Mm-hmm. And scribbling, I think the other comment that I really would like to get across is that people say to me ad nauseum, oh, I could never take one of your classes. I can't even draw stick figures. I bet I've heard that remark 100 times, maybe 1,000 times.
Really?
So, you know,
so what is meant by that when somebody says that?
That means they can't draw. That means they can't
They don't think they can draw, right?
That means they don't think that they can look at something like a vase of flowers and draw them exactly as they look. Well, drawing is not necessarily taking reality and transferring it to paper. Drawing is making marks on paper. Those can be scribbles. Those can be light marks. Those can be dark marks. They can be broken lines or solid lines. So drawing is not drawing a thing. Drawing is making marks on paper. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I can't have this long conversation with each person who says, but I can't even draw a stick figure. But I always say, you don't need to draw a stick figure. Who wants a stick figure anyway? You don't need to draw. You just need to do it. Mm-hmm. Just do it.
And how big are your classes?
I have kind of a large number of students on the roster. I have three classes, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and probably about 15 per class. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean all 15 show up at the same time, because all of my students, or 90% of my students, are retired.
Oh, that's an interesting...
And they're traveling. So that means all 15 are not going to show up at once.
And your classes are for how long of a period?
They're 2 hours, and they go on endlessly. I have people who've been in the classes for over 20 years.
Oh, my goodness sakes.
And that means, for me, trying to always come up with something...
Something new.
New. Uh-huh. New. Or repeating something from the past, but in a new way. But these people who are in the classes have been waiting their whole life to express themselves. And, oh, some of them are just like... Oh, they're just so in love with making art. They're just, mm-hmm. it's just like it's changing their life.
Well, it changed your life, didn't it?
It changed my life.
Absolutely. Well, let's transition from the beautiful things that you're telling us, and let's go back to where you were born.
Mm-hmm.
And you were born in California.
Mm-hmm.
And tell us where you were born.
Well, I was born in Southern California. Belmont Shores, and then my family moved to Long Beach. I'm the oldest of four daughters.
Mm-hmm.
And both of my parents are first-generation Californians, or Americans, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived in Long Beach for, well, my whole life until I went to...
You lived in the same house for 20 years.
In the same house, yeah.
Right. You don't see that very often anymore, do you?
No, not really. But I felt the same way when I moved to Redding. I got the same feeling of belonging and community when I moved to Redding that I had in Long Beach when I was a child.
Mm-hmm. Well, you said that it was a very close-knit community.
Mm-hmm.
And how was that close-knit to your family?
Well, my whole entire family lived in Long Beach. My father had four siblings, and my mother had three siblings. And they all had lots of kids, and we all lived in Long Beach, and my grandparents, both sets.
So there was a real strong sense of community just within the family alone.
Mm-hmm.
So you have Jewish-Russian background, and I guess you can tell us a little bit about your heritage.
Well, all four grandparents came from Russia or Ukraine. They all came during the pogroms in the early 1900s.
Mm-hmm.
And none of my family lived in Germany, so none of them were harmed by the Holocaust.
Oh, wonderful.
Luckily, they all got out early. And my mother's family moved to Canada. My grandfather was a pharmacist. And then my father's family moved to Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh,
mm-hmm.
California?
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
But then they all ended up in Long Beach from coming from different directions. And then my parents met. My father was a dentist in the Army, and my mother was 8 years younger than he was, and they met after the war.
Mm-hmm. And you say that your mother won an award.
Oh, that's funny. Mm-hmm. Well, we grew up in a small community. It was called Lakewood Village, and my mother was always a really classy dresser. She's just a beautiful woman, even at the age of 92.
And she's still living.
Mm-hmm. So, unbeknownst to me, I was looking through our garage a couple years ago my mother's garage, and I found a plaque that awarded her the best dressed woman in Lakewood Village. And it was not for just, there were several of those, like for several years in a row.
Did you know that when you were growing up this year?
No, I never knew that.
Well, that's quite an award. You called her the Donna Reed.
She was absolutely Donna Reed. She even wore kitten pups as she cooked breakfast for us.
Oh, so you had breakfast served every morning.
Every morning.
Barbara, we need to take another break right now. Mm-hmm. And for our listeners, if you're just tuning in, this is the Henry Cuenca Radio Show on KKRN 88.5, listener supported. And I'm Henry Cuenca, and my guest today is Barbara Enochian, a passionate artist in the area. And we're going to be right back in just a moment, so don't go too far. Thank you. Barbara, we're talking a little bit about where you grew up and your parents and your mother being a Donna Reed dresser and winning an award. Tell us more about your child's life.
Well, I was fortunate to live in a home that my mother didn't work. Not that many mothers did work in those days,
right? Mm-hmm.
But my mother was an immaculate housekeeper and an immaculate dresser, and really, I think she has always been a brilliant woman, and this was probably her outlet. She was probably somewhat frustrated and didn't even know it, but in her in her attempt to create order in her life, she just kept everything absolutely perfect, mm-hmm. if you want to use that word, for her family. You know, typical of the 1950s.
Okay.
I mean, it's just so typical.
It was a culture then. I mean, culture's
things.
Changed. There's
yeah.
No question. Sure.
Right. And she would always get up, put on her makeup, her nice clothing, her jewelry, her little high heels,
For the family.
For the family to start her day. And then she'd get into the car and drive us to school. Bye-bye. She was the president of the PTA. She was president of many organizations because she was so bright.
And what was her background?
Her background was 2 years at a community college. And then she needed to work, and so uh-huh. she did. But I don't think she was too young to even have a career. By the time she met my father, I think she was just 21.
Oh, well, she's right age.
Yeah,
right.
But she did work in Hollywood, and so did her sister, her younger sister. Mm-hmm. And they worked on for one of the studios there doing some kind of minor job, but it put them close to the movie stars, and she still remembers that very fondly.
You know, what I'm looking for is a dot that says art.
The dot that says art.
Yeah, where did that start?
So I believe came from my father, because I've described my mother as this kind of perfectionist type, and she still is.
Does she still make you breakfast?
Oh yes. if you give her a chance, it'll
she'd be right there.
The table's all set with the flowers in the middle, and she's
oh
still,
my
yes,
goodness
yes.
sake.
And but my father was the free spirit. You know, mm-hmm. he, as I said earlier, he was a dentist, so he had good small motor skills and a trained eye, and he had a passion for doing things, for creating things, for making things, for gardening. And he took some night classes in oil painting. And
that's where it was. Then.
And, you know, I thought he did that for many years. My mother said, no, only for like a year or two. But I just hung on every evening when he would come home from his art classes. I could not wait to see what he had painted.
Really?
I was like just enraptured with that.
Uh-huh.
Just spellbound by the fact that he could take an object from our home, put it in a still life, and bring it home.
Uh-huh.
And then they got those things framed, and they were around the house. And they first created my interest in art. And then he got into making tile mosaics. So he had all these big clippers and huge sheets of tile, and he'd clip.
Did he do this just for a hobby, or did he sell
for
some
a
of
hobby?
It?
No, he uh-huh. did
so
not
he,
sell.
He was also very passionate about
He was passionate about making things, and uh-huh. so he made mosaics that were tall as the wall, like maybe 8 feet tall,
really?
By 4 feet wide. And they were too big to hang in the house, so he would hang them outside on the walls at the exterior of the backyard.
Interesting. Did you retain any pictures of those?
No, mental pictures, because they were Picasso-like. He would draw out the patterns, and he was interested in artists. And he would show me books about artists like Picasso. And one of my most outstanding memories, I just thought of it. I think I had to be in third grade, and I loved drawing. I loved painting. And I had to do a book report on the Black Stallion, book 2 or book 3 or whatever it was. And I had drawn these pictures of horses, and I was pretty good at horses because I drew horses all day long. And I said to my dad, I don't know what color to draw the horse because it's nighttime. If I do a black horse and it's nighttime, I don't know what to do. And he said, well, make the horse blue. Who says it has to be black?
Get out of the box.
I said, Dad, that's a blue horse. He said, artists do that all the time, Barbie. Just paint it blue.
God, he started stretching your mind back then.
Here I am. How many years later? That remark was so novel to me and created so much freedom for me.
I can see that.
Like, I can paint outside the lines. I mean, he encouraged me in directions that have changed my life. So,
well, I can see very clearly how this all started. Mm-hmm. You were going to say you wish?
I wish he could be a part of this conversation. I wish he could see, you know, what I've done, and I wish I could tell him, thank you for what you did. He had no idea, I'm sure.
Wow, isn't that something? But certainly your mother recognizes all that.
And my mother was always the supportive onlooker.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. You had an interest in economics in going to school, and that was I guess a balance to art. I guess I would assume. Mm-hmm. So, how deep and what interested you in numbers and economics and dollars?
Well, I think it was because I was told you're going away to school, you need to learn a skill that will help you get a job afterwards, and business might be a good direction.
But your father discouraged you from becoming a dentist.
He discouraged me from a lot of things that I wish he had not discouraged me from. Uh-huh. He said, don't ever be a dental hygienist. Don't ever be a teacher. Don't ever be a nurse. Uh-huh. Those are all awful jobs. Well, I probably would have loved any one of those.
So what did he want you to become?
Well, he did mention be an architect, so he was forward thinking.
Uh-huh. Well, for sure.
Yeah, he was. He didn't say be a doctor, but I think that was mentioned. And I really went into college not knowing really what I was going to do. So I decided to take...
Most students don't, I think.
Yeah, I really didn't. So I did start by taking some economics classes, which kind of blew my mind. I can't say I loved them, but I thought, well, I'll stick with it. And then I've always been a game player. I love playing games. I like trying to puzzle things out. And economics was really about charts and graphs and what goes up and what goes down. Mm-hmm. So it became like playing a game for me, the whole study of economics.
What type of things do you read other than art?
Oh, other than I read lots of historical novels.
Uh-huh.
Lots of historical novels. Lots of novels. I love the escape and the knowledge, the things I learn through reading.
Mm-hmm. Well, you went on to Berkeley, and which obviously set the tone for you, right?
Mm-hmm. It did.
And you met your husband in Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
And so you eventually did get a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
And you were in Kentucky for a while,
right?
And you were really bored there, as I understand. So tell us about that time that you were in Kentucky and you just found yourself.
You know, it's funny. You can look back on your life and just see pivotal experiences.
Uh-huh.
And I got married after my second year of college, and my ex-husband was in ROTC. Mm-hmm. So he was assigned to a post. He was older than I was. So he was assigned to a post at Fort Campbell, Kentucky. And so the day after we got married, we moved and drove to Kentucky. Well, that was really one of my first times to drive outside of California.
Mm-hmm.
So that was exciting to cross the country.
Oh, yeah, it would be.
And so, you know, there I was all caught up with the excitement of moving to a totally new place. Then I got to the Army post. Oh, my gosh. I was like, surrounded by people who had nothing in common with me. Here I was coming from UC Berkeley where, you know, it was so liberal and there was so much new, there were so many new ideas and new things to think about and see and participate in, surrounded by other young, you know, girls my age. And then I was all by myself on this army post. And my my husband at the time was, I think he had to leave at 6 in the morning. He'd get back at 8 in the evening, eat dinner, and go to bed. So I was essentially totally by myself.
How long were you there?
For 9 months. About 9 months. Then I got orders for Vietnam.
Oh.
But during that time, I was a member of the Officers' Wives Club because he was a lieutenant. He was a first lieutenant.
Officer.
And through the Officers' Wives Club, I joined an art class. I did two things. I played bridge, and which I really grew to enjoy. And
that's where you learned some of your poker skills?
Card skills, yes. And then I actually, my mother is the poker player. And then I took the art class. Well, the first art class, there were probably 50 women who showed up for it. And I thought, oh, my gosh. But once we started painting, you know, the class started to dwindle. And by the end of the session, there were probably only 10 really passionate people in the class. Mm-hmm. I stayed up until 3 in the morning painting almost every night. My husband would come home. We'd have dinner. He'd go to bed. And I would paint in the spare bedroom till, I'm sure, 2 or 3 in the morning. I was just on fire. And I started to sell my things.
Oh, back
there,
then, you
right
were
then.
Selling.
Yeah, yeah. I was doing things. I look back now. I still have a few.
Uh-huh.
And I look back at them. They were impressionistic. They were loose. They were free. They were, you know, they weren't bad for someone who really wasn't trained.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you essentially were very bored during that 9 months stay.
Oh, and so lonely.
You picked up art again. Mm-hmm. And started your selling. And when you left Kentucky, did you come back to the Bay Area, or where did you go?
Well, he went to Vietnam, and I came home to Long Beach, and I finished 2 semesters at State College, Dominguez Hills, a new college.
Mm-hmm.
And you would think, you know, for a new college, kind of in a low-income area, that would be a real letdown after Berkeley. But it was just the opposite. Because at Berkeley, the classes had 1,000 students in them. And here I was in this setting with really passionate young professors. And I started taking art history courses and tons of economics courses. Pretty soon it was like half and half. And then I started adding the art courses to the art history courses. And I absolutely, because of my time at Dominguez Hills, I decided I am passionate about art. I am passionate
about
art.
So was that a deciding pivotal
point? It was another pivotal thing.
Uh-huh.
So there was the experience of painting while I was lonely beyond my wildest imagination at Fort Campbell, Kentucky. And then right after that, starting college at Dominguez Hills, a small, intimate state college where, you know, the professors thought I was, you know, kind of a more interesting student than some of the other students who were there, and they took me under their wing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I learned about people like Willem de Kooning and some of these abstract artists that had a big influence on my views of art. And when I went back to Berkeley, the following year I went back to Berkeley to finish because my husband came home from Vietnam. We moved back to the Bay Area. I went back to school to finish my one last year, and then I made the decision, I'm going to be a history of art major. I'm not going to be an economics major. I am passionate about this, and I don't know what I'll ever do with it, but I don't care.
You made the right choice.
I made the right choice. I did. And I've said that to so many people. I've said, you know, if you are crazy about something, if you love something, just do it, because it will all work out in the end. It will never be knowledge that's a loss to you.
Well, there's you've adopted a kind of a philosophy I've picked up in just speaking with you, that you believe in just keep moving.
Oh.
Right?
Everybody I know, I'm sure, would say that that is a apropos description of.
Do you ever have any major challenges in that you apply this? This keep moving, inert motivation and knowledge that you just got to take that next step.
I am kind of a person who needs to move, and I need to move when I'm doing my art. I need to move when I'm having a conversation with people. I tend to feel best when I have motion going on. It's mm-hmm. hard for me to actually sit still. If I do, I fall asleep.
I do that as well. I think most of us probably do, Barbara. Barbara, we've reached another point where we need to take another commercial. And so this is the Henry Cuenca Radio Show on KKRN, listener-supported radio, community radio. And I am Henry Cuenca, and I am with wonderful guest, passionate guest, Barbara Enochian, a very passionate, knowledgeable, experienced artist, and a great addition to our community. So we're going to be right back in just a couple of seconds, so be right back. We'll be right back with you. Barbara, we're back from our small break, and I want to talk about something that may be very emotional to you, that has been a very emotional thing in your life, and that was the loss of your son, Spence. And I know that had some very, very deep-rooted feelings, and I wonder if you could tell us about Spence and the experience that you went through.
Ooh, well, I have three sons. I had three sons: Sam, Brian, and then after Brian was born, I had several miscarriages. I wanted three children. Two mm-hmm. just didn't seem like a full enough family to me. But after the miscarriages, I thought, oh, I'm going to take a break. So finally, when I was almost 36 or so, I thought, oh my gosh, if I want another child, I have, you know, and it has to be now. Mm-hmm. So then I had Spencer, and I was older. He was six and a half or seven years younger than my younger son, mm-hmm. Brian. And I felt like he was just this gift. I felt like, almost like a grandmother, like just, I was given a gift. It was so much easier for me. It was fun. He just went wherever the family, you know, he did whatever the family did. And he was just a joy. And when he was in kindergarten, he was a huge boy, very, very tall.
This was here in our area?
Yeah, he was born here in Redding.
In Redding, mm-hmm.
And I remember in January of his year in kindergarten, he was 5 3/4 at the time. He came down with something that we thought was the flu, took him to the doctor. He said, yes, it's the flu. A few days later, he'd stopped eating. And for him, that was a rarity because he had an enormous appetite, big, healthy boy. And so we went back to the doctor, said, well, it still looks like the flu. We went home. And then I noticed that his left eye closed and he couldn't open it. Mm-hmm. So I lived in a neighborhood where there were several doctors, and I asked one of the neighborhood doctors if he could see him. And we walked over to their house, and I said, should I be worried about his eyelid closing? Is it just a virus? And he said, let me look at that. And he happened to be an oncologist, mm-hmm. Dr. Zid. Mm-hmm. And then he said, Spencer, let me see you walk in a straight line. Lift your right arm. Lift your left arm. And he couldn't lift his left arm.
Really?
He said, Spencer, wait, just lift your left arm. He said, I can't. That's my bad arm. And I said, what do you mean your bad arm? He said, that's the arm where my brothers always hit me and it hurts, so I can't lift it. Mm-hmm. Well, the truth was, the bone was actually eaten through by tumor. It was broken.
Oh, my goodness.
His humerus was broken. And so Dr. Zid, being an oncologist, said...
Did he diagnose that broken
on
the spot?
No, there was no way to know what was happening. Uh-huh. So he said, I'm calling the emergency room. Go right down there. I said, you think there's something going on here, don't you? He said, just go down there. I'll have them waiting for you. So then panic set in. We went down there, and that began this whole chain of tests and so forth, and they still couldn't figure out what was going on. And finally, after, I don't know, 3 or 4 days, they did a spinal tap. They did all kinds of things, and I said, can you just take an X-ray of his arm? I want to see what's going on in there. And that's when they, I mean, it was actually at my request. They took an X-ray, and they saw a hole in his bone, like the size of a silver dollar, where the tumor had just eaten through his bones. And as it turns out, there was a tumor on his optic nerve, which is why his eyelid closed. And his bone marrow was 98% tumor cells. He was not making blood. That's why he had been so sleepy, and we thought it was the flu. So then we were told, we went to UC, we're airlifted to Children's Hospital in San Francisco, and then UCSF. And we were told, after many more tests, that it was neuroblastoma. Now, everybody thinks that he had leukemia. No, it was neuroblastoma, which is a rare children's disease. And if you're 5 and a half when you're diagnosed, your chances of survival are about 5%. So I'm looking at my healthy son who's making jokes and... But anyway, it was just unbelievable to the point of where I almost started laughing, like, this is no. I mean, I could not absorb that.
So there was obviously no treatment available.
There was a big study going on where they put kids into a bone marrow transplant or intensive chemo and surgery, and you didn't have a choice of which way the treatment would go. So we put ourselves in that study, and he was drawn into the surgery where they removed all the tumor cells from his abdomen, and followed by intense chemotherapy, where they each month they took him to the almost to death's door, and then. And then the whole rest of the month we spent recuperating just to do it again. So we were in the hospital for almost 10 days a month for a year and a half.
And eventually
the disease retreated, and then it came back. And once it comes back, there's no stopping it.
Now, Barbara, I know that this was a jolting experience that went through. And as a result of that you tried to find yourself in different ways, and you started to exercise.
Well, I had been before that for a
and
lot
you're,
of
you're,
years.
You still exercise?
Yeah. It's that movement thing. But while he was in the hospital at UCSF, I would get up early in the morning and just run my heart out. I just ran, and the tears, I can cry now thinking. The tears flowing, just running
understand.
And running
Absolutely.
And running, like trying to, you know, run away the pain of it.
I think any parent, this is one of the worst things that can happen to a parent.
Trying to tire myself out so I wouldn't, you know, feel so intensely. And afterwards, it was, you know, probably even more than that.
So that experience led you to more intense art. To reaching out to people and extending that passion that you had and changing people's own lives that you experienced yourself in the pain that some of your students maybe have also endured. And I'm sure that you've been told by a lot of your students that the art has been very healthy and beneficial in their lives. Tell us about some of those students that you've had that have been given an extension of life through your art.
Well, you know, a lot of people come to me and they don't tell me exactly what's going on in their life at first. I mean, I do have one friend who lost her daughter, and she started, and, you know, we didn't talk about our losses. Mm-hmm. Instead, we focused on something, creativity and on the projects in front of us, but the bond was there. And then other people who lost their husbands have come to the classes. A woman just recently lost her husband after 60 years of marriage, and within a month and a half after his death, she was back in class because it fills, you know, her up to be in the group and to lose herself in just creating art. It's the mental part of art. Art's very mental. It's very mm-hmm. mental. It's very challenging intellectually, and so you need to focus on it, and it takes away the other things that might be painful in your life.
Mm-hmm. Well, we all need support during our lives, and I guess they manifest in different ways. Mm-hmm. So, in effect, you've taken your situation and allowed it to manifest to your students, is really.
Well, one of the main things was fear. You know, I had always had a lot of fear in my life. And once my son died, I thought, I have nothing to be afraid of now.
Oh, God.
And it changed the way I looked at my life ever after.
Barbara, what vision do you have for the future?
Ooh, I have a future that feels really exciting to me.
Okay.
I do. I just feel like I feel full. I feel like my life is full. I feel like my brain is full. Mm-hmm. I feel happy in my life. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know exactly where I'm going, but I am opening myself up to joy in my life. And
others, and you're touching other lives
and
as well.
And the friendship with others.
Good for you. Barbara, it's been real enjoyable to have you on our show, and I want to thank you very much for being with us. And you have been listening to community-supported KKRN 88.5 FM radio. We are supported by listeners like you and brought to you by volunteers from the community. Are you ready to support your local community radio? To become a listener supported, go to our website, KKRN, and click on the donate button or mail a check to P.O. Box 188, Montgomery Creek, California, 96065. You can also call 530-337-1101 to volunteer at KKRN Community Radio or to learn more about us. Thank you for listening to the Henry Cuenca Radio Show, where we are in earnest working to make our community and our world a better place. Please tune in to my shows each first and third Tuesday of each month at 8 o'clock Pacific Standard Time, where you will listen to another triumphant human story. I would love to hear from you, so please send me an email at Henry, H-E-N-R-Y, at KKRN.org. Or call me directly at 530-356-9811. And thank you for listening.